Harold talks about relationship. One time, I told God I really needed more Christians I could connect to in my life. Then I ordered a pizza. Harold delivered it. We started to meet up a couple of times a week to talk about Christ and Christians and church and life and stuff. Harold, you see, was introduced to God by a brethren outreach program, then waded out into warmer, more charismatic ecclesiastical waters. He had once been a pastor and had a very rough life before, during, and after doing that job for over a decade. He saw the extremely seamy and pointless, preening, bureaucratic, profit-hungry, political, and self-deluding side of church life, but he didn't give up on it, not as a concept in theory anyway. Doesn't mean he can find anywhere to go Sunday morning either. Talking to him pushed me emotionally to places I didn't normally go, spiritually speaking. Stuff that church services don't even begin to scratch the surface of. Harold seemed to know things about living a Christianity that is realer, truer, and more alive. Harold told me he doesn't think it's best for a Christian to wake up and simply say,
Now what do I feel like doing today?
Just as if there were no God with an interest in one's life. Now that kind of point is easy, even for someone like me to grasp. I was always taught that this was the wrong way to do things. It was always presented to me as a teenager as a very unchristian, worldly mindset that we were to sacrifice entirely to God. We were to always and only seek to do what He wanted. We weren't to want things in my culture. The Lord is thy shepherd. Thou shalt not want things. Harold disagreed with this idea. In fact, Harold felt a Christian should not either, as I'd been taught, wake up and say,
"Oh Lord, I do hereby sacrifice my own desires and will to do nothing at all whatsoever until you make clear unto me precisely what you would like me to do today for you, so I can just go and do it and then come back and tell you I did it or tried to."
Instead, Harold said it was good to wake up and say,
"So Lord, what are we going to do today? Let's go do some stuff. What do you think of us going and trying this?"
Like a date. Harold solidified my suspicion that many of us were in a tragicomedic standoff with God that went rather like this.
"Lord, why won't you tell me what you want me to not do today? Just tell me. I'm ready and willing to sacrifice it all to you. Honest, I am."
"Dude, I need you to want something. Then we'll talk. I love you and want to know all about and give you the desires of your heart. First discussing how workable and good they sound in the long term, perhaps. But you don't appear to genuinely have any desires, which means you're not really being alive much yet. And my son died so you could live and be free. And you're not doing that, really, which is a waste. Be a person. Let the identity I intended for you, the personality I have designed, start to flourish and grow. Don't try to thwart my design by stifling your identity and burying your personhood in the ground or hiding it under a basket. I made it for a reason. I want return on that investment. I am. Now you be."
"Oh Lord, just tell me who not to be, and I'll do my best to not be that person. Tell me who and what not to want, and I promise I'll do nothing at all today but not want that, hard as I can. I gave up Sarah for you. I gave up irony for you. I gave up New York and art. I want to not do whatever you don't want in my life, Lord."
"You know, you're really being a very bad date. No fun at all. And I built some fun into you. I remember distinctly. Where is it? Did you give that up too? It's a good thing I love you."
Because according to Harold, our relationship with Christ, with God, is supposed to be intimate, interactive. It's supposed to be a two-way, growing, negotiated thing with two people in it, rather than being seen purely in terms of power and say, for one person or the other. Because it's not meant to be an abusive or controlling relationship. And abusive relationships are the only ones that are all about one person getting all the say. And many of us had those kinds of relationships at home and at church. And we try to recreate that familiar dynamic everywhere we go. At work, at home, with God. Either with us on top, or under that controlling thumb, depending. Melody writes,
"I didn't know you could have a real friendly relationship with God. Everyone I knew seemed to be so formal with Him, praying in King James English, etc. No one talked about God or Jesus like they were real people. We talked a lot about living in the fear of the Lord, which I still don't feel has been adequately defined. Our common usage of fear is too Old Testament smitey for me, and from my own reading, I just don't see that that's how Jesus is. He's long-suffering and forgiving, not waiting to smite me.
It's supposed to be, like any marriage, Harold said, something other than merely a boss and employee or master and servant relationship. More intimate than that. More of us tossed into it, not less. Like Harvey told me about how it should be like singing a song and seeing if the other person reacts. It's supposed to be interactive. There's more than enough of God to go around, so we need to toss our whole selves into interaction with Him wholeheartedly. We have to be our whole selves as hard as we can and grow to be more all of that stuff. And often, that involves feelings. Feelings. On the front of the church in Ottawa, the one that caused the two worldwide Brethren divisions in the Tunbridge Wells Brethren in my lifetime, were the words God is love on the one side and God is light on the other. When I made the online cartoon of the division, I had the building tear in half between people who wanted to emphasize God as love, emotion, tolerance, freedom, and connectedness, and the ones who wanted to emphasize God as light, doctrine, rigidly upheld standards, structure, and correctness. One side was labeled God is light, and the other was labeled God is love. My thinking about this sharp divide down the middle of my church started with listening to my father, who was deeply invested emotionally in what went on at our meeting, particularly Bible reading meetings. It was all that got talked about much of the time in our house. My dad felt threatened by people who only wanted to talk about the love side of things and neglected responsibility, accountability, and standards of righteousness. Once Albert Hayhoe, a traditionalist patriarch figure, died, my dad felt like he was alone at reading meeting Thursday nights. He felt he was the only one not stressing a bunch of wishy-washy, permissive, liberal, modern stuff about God loving us no matter what. He wanted to hear a hardline stance about separating from this world and not entertaining ourselves in it, about being a good testimony by being a peculiar people, and about being heavenly people who weren't to act earthly. He wanted the Hayhoe preaching to live on, though Albert Hayhoe had died, and what Albert Hayhoe could teach charmingly, with a warm, twinkly smile and a great deal of earnestness, my father could not. Neither could either of Albert's surviving brothers. Our meeting was, at that point, sharply divided between people who thought just like my dad and people who went the other way. Was God light? Or was He love? A division was about to happen. Obviously, the Bible covers a wide range of topics and talks about them in a number of multifaceted, almost contradictory-sounding ways. It doesn't concern itself with these little biases and petty agendas of ours, and it doesn't stick mainly only to either heart or head stuff. It's broader than that. But my father felt like the brain, the spirit, the discerning, distinguishing, informed mind had gone out of our church with Albert Hayhoe, and that now it was just fuzzy, time-filling, empty-headed, simple-minded, feel-good Sunday school nonsense. I think he had a bit of a point, too, given what I heard there 5 times a week. But his efforts to continually balance these feel-good messages with what must have come off as feel-bad ones didn't go over well, and he got kangaroo court backstabbed and secretly silenced under pain of excommunication if he didn't remain as mute as a woman while all his peers sat all around him talking at meetings. He was expected to show up and listen to them discussing parts of the Bible, which increasingly were just jumping off points for what I recall as nothing more than time-filling stuff that didn't really add up to anything or make me think or feel anything at all. I annoyed him pretty deeply one time, shortly before he got silenced when I was about age 11. I said that rather than balancing all the positivity and love stuff by presenting the other side, that maybe he could demonstrate what being balanced looked like himself, without reference to them. I said if they were showing what it was like to be way off center in the love direction, that it didn't do much good to show them what it was like for him to be way off center in the light direction. I said he should show balance instead. I got silenced at that point in the ride home from meeting, I can tell you, but I'm not sure I was wrong. Two head led. The heart and head. Light and love divide has been a lifetime struggle inside me, in everything, including my dealings with God. When I prayed, I most often prayed that I could figure things out, that I could learn things, that I could know things, that things be revealed to me, that light be shone onto them. Because to me, life always seemed like it was all about figuring stuff out. I prayed for light rather than love, to get light and give light, clarity rather than love. And that was very one-sided. I wish I could say I got that fixed. With women, I have sometimes been very helpful to them by figuring out and helping them understand more deeply their hearts and thinking, their lives and problems and so on. But there's been something missing as to my not engaging them, not sharing with them my feelings. I mean, I've always been able to figure out what my feelings were, and I can identify verbally what they are and analyze them, but I've generally had a real inability to make others feel that I'm feeling anything much at all, rather than simply informing them what it is. My face, my body language, and my voice, like so many, many Plymouth Brethren people, give nothing much away, even compared to the generally reserved average Canadian Anglophone. We wouldn't stoop to playing poker, of course, we meeting folk, but most of us had world-class poker faces. We were being watched and judged, and we knew it. This is one reason why poems and songs and stories became increasingly important for me back when I was feeling my culture fall down around my ears. With them, I could try to make people not only know, but also feel and get what I was feeling. Otherwise, it was just facts to them. Also, if you blankly say, "I'm really, really angry right now," or "this thing is tearing me apart," with the kind of absolute composure many of us are capable of, it doesn't quite register with the listener. Sounds like you're talking about something that's not quite real, or is about someone else. There's no connection or sharing in it. Of course, my being very calm and showing no reaction while people share all manner of dark secrets and emotions with me works well when there's trouble, but it's always been in that one direction. I'm the sounding board, they're sounding.